A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 8th chapter, verses 1 to 26. Maitre Vacha, Sanakadya, Navarascha, Vipurhangsa, Unigati, Naitigrihan, Bhamasutta, Yavasan, Udharitasa. The great sage Maitreya said, the four great Kumara sages, headed by Sanaka, as well as Narada, Ripu, Hansa, Aruni, and Yati, all sons of Brahma, did not live at home, but became Urdhvareta, or Naishtik Brahmacharis, unadulterated celibates. So we heard the result of hearing the story of the Daksha Yajna, same result as hearing the genealogy of the daughters of Manu. And the last verse was, Itam pavitram paramishchestitam yashasyam ayushyam aghaukamarshanam yonityada kanya naro nukirtaye tunottyakam korava bhakti bhavata. If one hears and again narrates with faith and devotion this story of Daksha Yajna, then certainly one is cleared of all contamination of material existence. So when we heard about the dynasty of Swayambhuva Manu, beginning of this canto, first chapter, the result was Shrinvata Sharadhanasya Sadhya Papa Hara Para. Immediately, all sinful reactions are reduced. Sadhya Papa Hara. And now we'll hear the story of Dhruva Maharaj. And what will we get by hearing this story of Dhruva? Same thing. Plus, much, much more. This story is just like a desire tree. Can give you whatever you desire, whether it's this world or the next world. Wealth, beauty, fame, knowledge, power, and even pure devotional service and going back to Godhead by hearing the story of Dhruva Maharaj. So we heard already of the daughters of Swayambhuva Manu and their dynasties. Now we'll hear of one son, Uttanapad, and his most famous descendant, Dhruva Maharaj. So we heard about this verse before describing the dynasty of Uttanapad. Then he's describing, Maitreya is describing the sons of Brahma who had no children, the celibates, the Naishtik Brahmacharis. So they have no dynasty, but still they were also sons of Lord Brahma. So they are all mentioned here in this first verse. Prabhupada explains in paragraph 2, a significant phrase is Naite Grihan Hyavasan. They did not live at home. Griha means home as well as wife. In fact, home means wife. Home does not mean a room or a house. It's interesting. Home. The word home, it's not a house, but it's where the wife is. One who lives with a wife lives at home. Otherwise, sannyasi or brahmachari, even though he may live in a room or in a house, does not live at home. Quite an interesting concept here. Srila Prabhupada is explaining to us. So for a brahmachari, everything belongs to the guru. He goes out, he begs. I mean, it's traditionally, this is what the brahmachari life was. And for sannyasi, everything belongs to Krishna. Of course, for everyone in Krishna consciousness, everything belongs to Krishna. But for the grihastha, he's not so Krishna conscious and everything belongs to the wife. So wife means home. So she's like the controller of the home. So here at the end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, this narration has dealt with the descendants of Lord Brahma from Manu's daughter Prasuti. Prasuti's daughter was Dakshayani or Sati, in relation to whom the story of the Daksha Yajna was narrated. 7 chapters, we heard. Six chapters. Maitreya is now explaining about the progeny of the sons of Brahma. Out of the many sons of Brahma, the brahmachari sons headed by Sanak and Nara did not marry at all, and therefore there is no question of narrating history of their descendants. So if you remain brahmachari your whole life, what is the benefit? There are some benefits described in the scriptures. If you remain naishtik brahmachari your whole life, what is the result? Even farther than the sun. Brahmaloka. Brahmaloka, yes. You simply, all you have to do is just remain Naishtik Brahmachari, you go to Satyaloka. This is 4.11.5, this reference. Also, Prabhupada mentions you become Jati Smara. Your memory is very, very good. Just by hearing it once, you can remember things. So these are the benefits of celibacy. Jati Smara, I think, is the word. So verse 2, now we'll begin hearing the dynasty of irreligion. And it's also beneficial, we hear at the end of this dynasty, it's very beneficial to hear this dynasty of irreligion. This is another dynasty coming from Lord Brahma. There's pious sons, and there's also impious sons. So now we're going to hear all about the impious sons and daughters of Lord Brahma. Verse 2. Another son of Lord Brahma was irreligion, whose wife's name was falsity. From their combination were born two demons named Dumba, or bluffing, and Maya, or cheating. These two demons were taken by a demon named Niriti, who had no children. So it's very interesting to see wherever there is irreligion, there is also falsity. Why is that? If there is irreligion, there must be also falsity. Because they're married? Yeah. Another reason? Yeah. What's the logic behind it? Yes, that's true. Yes. Because actually, truthfulness is one of the legs, four legs of religion. So therefore, irreligion must have falsity, must be the opposite of the four legs. No austerity, no truthfulness, no mercy, and whatever the fourth one was. So when irreligion and falsity are come together, then the result is bluffing and cheating. Namba and Maya. So any person who is engaged in telling lies and falsity must be also cheating and bluffing. So how is it that Brahma is so good? How can these bad things come from Brahma? How is it possible? Okay, because we need destruction, devastation. What's the logic? Yeah, okay.
There's duality in everything, so there's a front side and a back side.
Yes, right, that's right. Yes. There's a front side and back side. Example is that light and darkness, they both come from the sun. Darkness is from the sun, light is from the sun. Clouds are from the sun. So both must be there. So in the purport, Śrīla Prabhupāda says, it is understood herein that Atharma, irreligion, was also a son of Brahma. He married his sister, Mrsha. This is the beginning of sex life between brother and sister. Imagine, just from the beginning of creation, these irreligious activities. It's hard to imagine. This unnatural combination of sex life can be possible in human society only where there is Atharma or irreligion. It is understood that in the beginning of creation, Brahma created not only saintly sons like Sanak, Sanata, and Narada, but also demonic offspring like Niriti, Adharma, Dumba, and falsity. Everything was created by Brahma in the beginning. So who knows this demigod, Niriti? Who is Niriti? What is he in charge of? Death or destruction personified? Anything else? Anybody knows about Niriti? Niriti. I looked it up. So there's some references here. 320-339. He's in charge of the southwestern part of the universe. So he's one of the eight predominating deities is Niriti. Among his company, Indra, Agni, Yama, Varuna, Niriti, Vayu, Kuvera, and Shiva. There are eight predominating deities of the prominent heavenly planets, and Niriti is one of them. Strangely enough. What's that? No, exactly. And this will be described later on in this canto, 425-53, that Puranjan used to go through the western gate of Niriti. Puranjan used to go through the gate of Niriti. to the place known as Vaishasa, accompanied by his friend Lubdhaka. This is 4:25:53. The first one was three in charge of southwestern part. That is 3:23:39. And there's the and then the one about the AP dominating deities is Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya, 21:58. Yeah, so these are your references. You can look them up. 21:58. Yeah. Southwestern direction. And according to this, the purport of fourth canto is he's in charge of the rectum also. So due to greed, we eat unnecessarily, and it causes pain at the time of evacuation. So the gate is known as niriti, or the painful gate. And many people at the time of death, they leave through this gate. Sinful people. Instead of going through the other gates. So verse 3, continuing this line of Adharma. Maitreya told Vidura, O great soul, from Dambha and Maya, that's cheating and bluffing and cheating, were born greed and nikriti, or cunning. From their combination came children named Krodha, anger, and Hingsa, envy. And from their combination were born Kali and his sister, Durukti, harsh speech. So again, the next level of children is greed and cunning. And then from this comes anger and envy. So if somebody is envious, he wants to see harm done to other persons. So therefore, violence is there. So, Lopa, Nikriti, Krodha, Himsa, and Kali and Durukti. So quarrel, the age of quarrel is married to Durukti, or harsh speech. So where there is quarrel, there is harsh speech, often. You can turn the page to the next one. And verse 4. O greatest of all good men, by the combination of Kali and harsh speech, were born children named Mrityu, death, and Piti, fear. So when people quarrel, then often they kill each other, or else they cause great fear. They condemn each other. From the combination of Mrityu and Piti came children named Yatana, excessive pain, and Niraya, hell. So how is it that after death and fear comes excessive pain and hell? I guess it's obvious that hellish planets. Actually, I experienced it in this life. How after Mrityu comes Yatana and Niraya, because I had near-death experience in the hospital. And when I became conscious of my surroundings, after my death was Yatana and Niraya, was hell and excessive pain. After that, due to an overdose of anesthetic, I experienced near-death experience, and then when I came to consciousness, I was in a very hellish place in the hospital, with one person was dying on one side, and the other person, another lady, was having a miscarriage. So birth and death on two sides, and I was in the middle of it, and I was having, and they had, you know, things sticking in me and all that. So therefore, it was very. I got that realization when I was lying in the hospital of this experience of this, how after death comes excessive pain and hell. So sometimes people in this world, they prefer death to their excessive pain. They want to, they're having so much pain that they would prefer to die. So it's actually worse than death sometimes, that this excessive pain. Or at least that's what people think. Yes?
Can we see that also that the next thing that comes is again in the womb, which is also hell?
Yes. Okay, after death you go in the womb. So that's hell. And excessive pain, you're bitten by worms and burnt by the gastric fire of the mother. That's another way of looking at it too, right? Yatana and Niraya, after death. So verse 5, my dear Vidura, I have summarily explained the causes of devastation. One who hears this description three times attains piety and washes the sinful contamination from his soul. So here in the Sanskrit, no, it's not, yes, Pratisarga. We heard about Sarga, we heard about Visarga, and here we have Pratisarga. That's the cause of devastation, Pratisarga. So if you hear about these causes of devastation, all these things we should always know, there are causes of devastation. Anger, envy, fear, they're causes of devastation. So how, now Maitreya is giving us a benediction here, that if you hear this description, then you will become pious. So how is it possible by hearing about adharma, this causes piety? What does Prabhupada say in the purport? Yes. Sankirtan?
Generally, piety, people are God-fearing.
God-fearing. Pious people are God-fearing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. When you hear this, you hate these things. Yes. Does everybody agree on that? Yes. Yes, if you're irreligious, all these things will follow. This is a step-by-step fall down as soon as you commit to irreligious activities. So Prabhupada says, if a person is pious and hears about all these causes of devastation, this is about five lines down, he will feel hatred for all these, and that will cause his advancement in a life of piety. So at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, we should learn to despise all the causes of devastation, beginning from irreligion and cheating, and then we shall be able to make advancement in a life of piety. Possibility of our attaining Krishna consciousness will be easier, and we shall not be subjected to repeated devastation. Repeated devastation. What is the repeated devastation that we're subjected to in this world? Prashanta?
Death.
Death. What else? Bhutva bhutva pralayate. Even in this life, we experience repeated devastation. The body is always being destroyed and created. It's always, always. It's one of the four types of devastation is the change of body. So actually, we're always in a state experiencing this devastation. So if all what we have, our gross body, this is based on the subtle. So if we hear about these things, and if we see this in ourselves, then we wish these things weren't there. And Krishna hears that desire and he reciprocates with us. And then we can make advancement in spiritual life. Could be. Could be. I don't know if it's the same person. Yes. Well, he's asking, is this the actual demigod? Could be. It could be. Yeah, they're demigods. Kali is definitely a demigod. He's in charge of one of the yugas. So that's his service, to be in charge of Kali Yuga. If they're demigods, does that mean they're devotees? Mixed devotees. Yeah. That's true. That's another point. Among the demigods are classified the demons, the rakshasas. There's eight types of demigods, amongst which some are demoniac. So they could also be included in those demoniac species of demigods. That's true. Even in the dynasty of demons, Daityas, Prahlad is, yes, in Gita, Krishna says, of demons I am devoted Prahlad. Yes.
Yeah, also they are higher beings. So they,
yes. They make, well, they're sons and daughters of Brahma.
Also they are
very high.
They are serving in some way.
Yeah.
They are serving the purpose of devastation. Which is,
that's right.
It's part of the Lord's plan.
Yeah, just like Lord Shiva is serving. So they are also serving. Lord Shiva preaches Mayavad philosophy. He fosters devotion by preaching Mayavad philosophy. So it seems opposite, but actually all things are needed to help the living entities go back to Godhead. Some living entities need a kick, they need a negative, and some living entities, they take to the positive, they're attracted to devotional service. So both are there in this material world.
When
yes.
You mentioned that you are a demigod,
demigod is predominator. That is abhi. Right. That is what's the technical? Abhi adi daivik. Adi daivik. Yes, they're adi daivik, and we're adi atmik. Okay. So here also we should make a note again. Sinful contamination is washed away again by hearing. So all through this, the beginning of this canto, these two lilas, if you hear these dynasties, all your sinful contamination is washed away. So one interesting thing I also found, I'm comparing the Kapiladeva's teachings on anartha nivritti, or how to wash away the contaminations. And I have a verse here. This is 3:28:4. And I've put it up on the flip chart so you can follow along, because it was a very interesting verse I found. Oh, sorry, 3:28:11. I've got, 11. I couldn't read my writing. It's 3:28:11.
Not 4.
Not 4, no. Here, in my writing wasn't correct. So I said 4. It's 11, actually. So the verse goes like this. Pranayamarta hito shandharanavishchakilvishan patyaharina sansargan dhyanena nishwaran gunan. By practicing the process of pranayam, one can eradicate contamination of his physiological condition. So pranayama cleanses contamination of the body. And by concentrating the mind, dharana, one can become free from all sinful activities. By restraining the senses, pratyahara, one can free himself from material association. And by meditating, dhyana, on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can become free from the three modes of material attachment. So I thought that was very interesting to compare the Kapiladeva process of anartha nivritti, or freeing yourself from material contamination. Now we're following a different process in the fourth canto, simply hearing the narrations of the genealogies of the devotees. So this is our process, hearing carefully. Verse 6. Maitreya continued, O best of the Kuru dynasty, I shall now describe before you the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu, who is born of a part of a plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So who is this part of a plenary expansion?
Brahma,
yes.
But he's not a
Jiva.
He remains a Jiva.
Yes, he remains a Jiva. Part of plenary expansion. Here he's described as an Angsha, but actually, Angsha. Actually, he's Jiva. Sometimes he is. Yes. When there is no Brahma. Sometimes Kala can also refer, sometimes Angshangsha can refer to Jiva. So in this case here, Angshangsha refers to Lord Brahma. Interesting. So we heard about the descendants of the daughters, and it's not mentioned here, but the reason why we're not going to hear about Priyavrata is because he didn't get involved in politics. He was a renunciant. He wasn't interested. He wanted to give his whole life to Krishna consciousness. But then at the end, when Uttanapada's dynasty runs out, he'll be forced to take up management. As many devotees, even now in ISKCON, they're forced to take up management, leaving aside their renunciation. So this will also happen. The original one was Priyavrata. But now we're going to hear about Uttanapada, verse 7. Swayambhuva Manu had two sons by his wife Shatarupa, and the names of the sons were Uttanapada and Priyavrata. Because both of them were descendants of a plenary expansion of Vasudeva, Supreme Personality of Godhead, they were very competent to rule the universe, to maintain and protect citizens. King Uttanapada had two queens named Suniti and Suruchi. Suruchi was much more dear to the king. Suniti, who had a son named Dhruva, was not his favorite. So why is he going to describe Dhruva Maharaj? Srila Prabhupada explains. What is the reason he's described different dynasties? Why Dhruva now? Yes? Yes. He just described impious. So now he wants to describe pious. Now, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada will explain there are many things. He's already telling us the lessons to learn before we study it. Can anybody tell me one lesson? One lesson we're going to learn from Dhruva. You've got a mind map of all the lessons? Wow. Okay. Maybe you can put it up afterwards for us. What one lesson? Yes. Austerity. Determination. Yes. So, yes. Source of all benedictions. We'll find out. Yes. Not, what's that? Dovetailing material desires in devotional service. Yes. Prashant. Right. Very soon. So we all want that. We want to be elevated very soon. We'll read the purport and then you'll hear all about it. Yeah. What? Cleansing heart. Okay, let's see what Prabhupada says, starting in the middle of the purport. From his pious activities, one can learn how one can detach himself. Oh, nobody said that. Detach himself from material possessions. How one can enhance one's devotional service by severe austerities and penances. Not recommended in this age. By hearing the activities of pious Dhruva, one can enhance one's faith in God and can directly connect with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these are the... At the end of this course, we hope that you will have all of these things. The end of hearing Dhruva Maharaj's. Thus, one can very soon be elevated to the transcendental platform of devotional service. The example of Dhruva Maharaj's austerities can immediately generate a feeling of devotional service in the hearts of the hearers. What we can expect to achieve by hearing Dhruva Maharaj's pastimes, this feeling for devotional service, just imagine. Because such a small boy, if he can do it, we can do it. Very small boy. So we should also get that determination of Dhruva Maharaj. Verse 9. Once upon a time, King Uttanapad was patting the son of Siruchi Uttama, placing him on his lap. Dhruva Maharaj was also trying to get on the king's lap, but the king did not very much welcome him. While the child Dhruva Maharaj was trying to get on the lap of his father, Siruchi, his stepmother became very envious of the child, and with great pride she began to speak so as to be heard by the king himself. So she's envious. What comes from envy? With anger? What's going to happen next? Harsh speech. After envy and anger comes quarrel and harsh speech. So this is what we can expect. Next, in verse 11. Queen Suruchi told Dhruva Maharaj, "My dear child, you do not deserve to sit on the throne or on the lap of the king. Surely you are also the son of the king. But because you did not take your birth from my womb, you are not qualified to sit on your father's lap." So, because you don't have a certain birth, you're not qualified. Who says this? Who else says this? Modern days. You don't have this birth? Smarta Brahmins. They say the same thing. And it all started with Siruchi. Verse 12. "My dear child, you are unaware that you were born not of my womb, but of another woman. Therefore, you should know your attempt is doomed to failure. You are trying to fulfill a desire which is impossible to fulfill. If you at all desire to rise to the throne of the king, then you have to undergo severe austerities. First of all, you must satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan, and then, when you are favored by him because of such worship, you shall have to take your next birth from my womb." So, very, very proud and envious statements. Harsh speech by Suruchi. So the caste Brahmins is very similar. They say, okay, now you're a Shudra. You just worship the Lord. In your next life, you can be born as a Brahmin. And then you can act. Could be, yeah. That's true. It could have started, all started with a curse. The Lord Shiva's followers, they cursed the Brahmins. And so they have this deluded mentality. So these arguments are answered in Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a nice quote, actually there's a nice verse. Canto 5, chapter 1, verse 35. It says, a devotee who has taken shelter of the dust from the lotus feet of the Lord can transcend the influence of the six material whips, hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death, and he can conquer the mind and five senses. However, this is not very wonderful for a pure devotee of the Lord, because even a person beyond the jurisdiction of the four castes, an untouchable, is immediately relieved of bondage to material existence if he utters the holy name of the Lord even once. So this is the proof. And in the purport, Prabhupada explains that purport to 5.1, I think it's the same verse, 5.135, that I'll just read one sentence from the purport. Very, very wonderful sentence. When a person, even though a chandala, is initiated by a pure devotee into chanting the holy name of the Lord, his body changes as he follows the instructions of the spiritual master. So it's not just you take initiation and your body changes. As you follow, then you get the change. It's a purport to 5.135. Yeah. So a wonderful explanation by Srila Prabhupada. It's not simply automatic. We have to follow the instructions, spiritual master. Verse 14. The sage Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, as a snake, when struck by a stick, breathes very heavily. Dhruva Maharaj, having been struck by the strong words of his stepmother, began to breathe very heavily because of great anger. When he saw that his father was silent and did not protest, he immediately left the palace and went to his mother. So here again, the father is silent, as in the last Leela. Father is silent, of course, different circumstances. And Dhruva is not having the same reaction as Lord Shiva. He's reacting in quite a different way. He couldn't tolerate this insult at all. Like he was being beat, a snake being beaten with a stick, cannot tolerate. So here in the Sanskrit, we have the actual durukti vita, harsh speech, comes in the Sanskrit. Durukti vita, he's struck by the harsh words. Not something physical, but something, he's struck by words. So this is, it's very subtle. This is verse 14. As a snake, when struck by a stick, breathes heavily. Dhruva Maharaj, having been struck by the strong words of his stepmother, Durukti Vita in Sanskrit. Verse 15. When Dhruva Maharaj reached his mother, his lips were trembling in anger, and he was crying very grievously. Queen Suniti immediately lifted her son onto her lap, while the palace residents, who had heard all the harsh words of Suruchi, related everything in detail. Thus Suniti also became greatly aggrieved. This incident was unbearable to Suniti's patience. She began to burn as if in a forest fire. And in her grief, yes? In her grief, she became just like a burnt leaf, and so lamented. As she remembered the words of her co-wife, her bright lotus-like face filled with tears, and thus she spoke. Started with a dharma.
Dhanapada had two wives.
Yes.
And according to dharma, it means he was equal to both.
Yes.
And because
he was a dharma. Yes, he was partial, and then falsity. And then cheating. He didn't allow the other son. And then greed, nikriti, krodh, hingsa, all of them follow one after the other. The dynasty of irreligion. So we see it. First we heard it, and now we see it in action immediately in the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. So you might wonder, well, why are they talking about the dynasty of irreligion? So now we're seeing it in action. And we can see it practically in our lives also, if we follow this dynasty of irreligion. And that happens. Actually, I was talking to one devotee last summer, and he was telling me how he was having a problem with his wife. And I said, well, you have to be careful, you know, don't keep this in your heart, because you see the dynasty of, I was telling him, I had just read the dynasty of irreligion. I said, if you have anger and envy, then after that comes death. He said, yes, yes, that happened in our relationship. Death and fear. I was afraid she was going to kill me because she had a knife. it was really true. So anyway, these things happen. Dynasty of irreligion in action. So the fourth canto was the first we heard Kapiladeva's teachings, and then in fourth canto we see it in action. Here immediately we see the dynasty of irreligion in action, and in the beginning of this lila here, Dhruva Maharaj. So then we can understand it better. Verse 17. She also was breathing very heavily, and she did not know the factual remedy for the painful situation. Not finding any remedy, she said to her son, my dear son, Ma Mangalam, don't wish for anything inauspicious for others. Anyone who inflicts pain upon others suffers himself from that pain. Very, very interesting statement here. If you inflict pain on others, you will suffer from the same pain. How is this? Is this the answer? No, wait. I'm asking a question. You keep it for after the class, please. Because I'm asking a question on this. So then after the class, you can bring up something else. Daksha. Example is Daksha. He gave pain to Sati and Shiva, and he received that same pain. She died, he died. He will get the reaction in the future.
Or another way is he's projecting his own problem in us. He reacts, expresses in an action. But actually, he himself has that problem. So it's a projection of his own.
Projection of his own problem. Yes. So she's telling her son, at least don't become like her. Don't wish ill like she is. She's wishing ill, you don't become like that. Remember in first canto there was a verse, interested, kind of relates, ties in with this. You know? You remember that verse? It was spoken by Parikshit to... Yes. 117:22. Yes.
Whoever, if you partake of the devotion, if you bank the precipitant, you will share.
Yes, if you identify the perpetrator, you will go to the same destination. 117:22. So these are all reasons why we should not inflict pain upon others, or even if someone inflicts pain upon us, we should not identify the perpetrator. Verse. Of course, it's very hard to follow this philosophy. Spoken by Dharma. Yes. To the cow. To Parikshit. So verse 18. Suniti said, my dear boy, whatever has been spoken by Saruchi is so, because the king, your father, does not consider me his wife, or even his maidservant. He feels ashamed to accept me. Therefore, it is a fact that you have taken birth from the womb of an unfortunate woman, and by being fed from her breast, you have grown up. So she doesn't say, oh, anyway, she's just nonsense. Just see the reaction of Suniti. She could have said so many other things. You know, she could have said, yes, no, you know, your father is useless. He just favors the other wife, or else that other wife, she's just envious. She's saying that because she's envious. She could have said so many things. And what did she say? Don't wish ill for others. And it's true. Your father doesn't like me. She's saying the truth, actually. Very straightforward, she is. So she's saying, yes, what Tsuruchi says is true. He's not blaming anybody. Verse 19. My dear boy, whatever has been spoken by Suruchi, your stepmother, although very harsh to hear, is factual. Therefore, if you desire at all to sit on the same throne as your stepbrother Uttama, then give up your envious attitude and immediately try to execute the instructions of your stepmother. So she's saying, you're envious. Dhruva, give up your envious attitude. She's saying, you don't be envious. She's not at all criticizing Suruchi. She said, no, Suruchi's right. Just imagine this kind of reaction. Suruchi's right. Yes, your father doesn't like me. Her words are true. You should do what she says. Without further delay, you must engage yourself in worshipping the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, just imagine. Suruchi's words are actually a benediction for Dhruva. Why were Suruchi's words a benediction? Because he's going to do it? Yeah? Because she told him what to do? Well, why is it good? Why is it a benediction? Bhagavad. Yes, that's the answer. It stimulates him to do his devotion. And he became a great devotee, pure devotee. Yes.
She became also guru for
her son. Right.
But it's actually
Suniti's
words.
Yes, I didn't say Suniti, I said Suruchi. Yeah. Suruchi. How are Suruchi's?
It's actually his mother tells him.
Yes, his mother, but his mother tells him, you should do this. But before his mother was Suruchi. Right. So, verse 19, Prabhupada's purport, Shiksha Guru. So Suruchi was a Shiksha Guru, or what? Yeah, no, the mother was the Vartma, what was that? Vartma Pradarshana. I think later on it will be said, Srila Prabhupada will say, she was the Vartma Pradarshika Guru of Dhruva Maharaj. The mother, Vartma Pradarshika Guru, yes? Of Dhruva Maharaj, the one who shows the path to someone who brings you to Krishna consciousness. So he's called the Vartma Pradarshika Guru. So who else was insulted? But those words were a benediction we've heard of before. Maharaj Parikshit, yes, he was cursed. Vidura was insulted, yes. And those words, he was thanking Duryodhan in his heart. Thank you for giving me the chance to get out of this place. Yeah.
Vyasadev.
Well, that was different. Narada was his guru. So it wasn't like somebody was insulting him. He was chastising him. Chastising his disciple. Right. In that sense. Yes, chastising his disciple. So Burijan had a nice comment here. In this world, so many bad things happen to us. Sometimes we'd like to retaliate. But out of those worst of things, the greatest benefit can come if we harness the energy and take shelter of Krishna. So we have this reaction. So we harness that energy of anger or I'm going to get him or revenge. But we do like Dhruva. With determination, we worship Lord Krishna. Take that same energy, which comes naturally as our reaction to things that happen to us in this world. Verse 20, Suniti is speaking. Yasyam kripatmam paricharya vishva vibhavanayata guna pipatte tajat patishtat kalu paramishtyam param jitatma shasana vivandyam. Suniti continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great that simply by worshipping his lotus feet, your great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, acquired the necessary qualifications to create this universe. Although he is unborn and is the chief of all living creatures, he is situated in that exalted post because of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom even great yogis worship by controlling the mind and regulating the life air. Prana. So now Suniti is encouraging Dhruva to worship the Lord because she's showing what Lord Brahma got by worshipping the Lord. Lord Brahma, by worshipping by austerities and depending on the mercy of the Lord, he was able to create the universe. So just imagine what kind of power you can get by worshipping the Lord. So Prabhupada in one purport explained that no one can create anything without the mercy of the Lord, because everyone sees according to his ability. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains, this is 2.5.17, how we can become empowered in our service to the Lord. How is this empowerment awarded? To what extent? Prabhupada says, is awarded by the Lord according to one's something. What is it? What is the thing that gives us more empowerment? Yeah. Sincerity?
Faith.
Surrender. Remember, I think it was yesterday's class, there were two words. Yesterday or the day before, there were two words which Prabhupada was emphasizing. Depending on the mercy of the Lord, not your own strength. But there's something about us. Yeah, that's true. We depend on the mercy. Willingness to render service. But also, I would say, service attitude. Prabhupada says, one must be voluntarily willing to render service to the Lord, and the Lord will empower the doer in proportion to his surrender. So it's all in there, surrender, willingness. But the service attitude is the essence. The service attitude means you really want to do service to the Lord. And then you're empowered and you can create a universe. This is a purport 2.5.17. And there's another verse, 3.9.30. The Lord explains how he will get the power of creation. The Lord Vishnu says, Bhuyastvam tapa atishta vidyam chaiva marashayam tabhyam antahidi praman lokan jakshasya pavitan. Brahma, situate yourself in penance and meditation and follow the principles of knowledge to receive my favor. By these actions, you will be able to understand everything from within your heart. So these are the qualifications for becoming empowered in devotional service. Penance, austerity, knowledge, mercy of the Lord. So we are in verse 20, 21. Tata manurva bhagavan pitamaho yamekamatya purudakshinairatmakai ishtva pipete turavapamanyato Thamam sukham devyam atapavagyam. Suniti informed her son, your grandfather, Saimuvmanu, executed great sacrifices with distribution of charity, and thereby with unflinching faith and devotion, he worshipped and satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By acting in that way, he achieved the greatest success and material happiness, and afterwards achieved liberation, which is impossible to obtain by worshipping the demigods. So she's giving her second example. First was Lord Brahma. Look what he got by worshipping the Lord. Second example, look what Manu got. He got material gain as well by performing sacrifice. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, the success of one's life is measured by one's material happiness in this life and liberation in the next. Such success can be achieved only by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The words ekamatya mean concentrating one's mind on the Lord without deviation. This process of undeviating worship of the Supreme Lord is also expressed in Bhagavad Gita as Ananya Bhak. Which verse? Ananya Bhak. Sadhu eva samantavya samyag vyavasito isha. 9.30. Apichet saracharo bhajtimam ananyabhak. So this is describing a sadhu who has some material mix there. He has apichet suracharo. Apichet suracharo. Yes. That he's got some bad behavior there, just mixed in. But if he worships me, ananyabhak, without deviation, he will become a sadhu. So this is certainly going to be the case with Dhruva Maharaj, there's going to be quite a mixture here of, not bad behavior, but a mixture of material motives in his devotional service, in his worship. But because he's a Nanyapak, because he's without deviation, then he will become purified. He'll become sadhu. Verse 22. Tameva vatsa shaya britya vatsalam mumukshubir mikya paratya paratim ananya bhave nija dharma bhavite manasya vastapya bhajasa purusham. My dear boy, you should also take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is very kind to his devotees. Persons seeking liberation from the cycle of birth and death always take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in devotional service. Becoming purified by executing your allotted occupation, just situate the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your heart, and without deviating for a moment, engage always in his service. So she's telling him about liberation. He's not much interested in liberation. But anyway, she's encouraging him that, no, actually, this is the best thing if you get liberation. Just become purified, do your duty, and situate the Lord in your heart without deviation. So that part he will follow, without deviation, situating the Lord in the heart. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the system of bhakti yoga, described by Queen Suniti to her son, is a standard way of God realization. Everyone can continue in his constitutional occupational duties at the same time, keep the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart. So she's encouraging, you remain a kshatriya and you worship the Lord. So she's giving him very nice instructions. This was also instructed by the Lord himself to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, go on fighting, but keep me within your mind. Which verse is this? Go on fighting. 8:7. Tasmat sarveshikale shumam manusmarayutyacha mayapitamano buddhimam vivaisya sasangshaya. And then Prabhupada says a very wonderful thing. That should be the motto of every honest person seeking perfection in Krishna consciousness. So I thought that was a very interesting statement. Why is he saying this should be the motto of every honest person? Why honest? Why? What is this honest? Who is this honest person? Adi Purush. One does not renounce one's duties. So how is that being honest? He has to perform his duties. Why? Okay, take care of all those who are dependent. Why else, Adi Purush? That is our constitution, to serve Krishna. Well, he's talking about, what duties are you talking about? Constitutional duties? Or, no, he's talking about those other duties that you have in this world. You should not renounce those duties. Because, so honest means that you're, what?
Free from pretension.
Yes, free from pretension. You're not thinking, well, oh, like Arjuna was thinking, no, I should be a Brahmin. I don't want to be a Kshatriya. I want to be a Brahmin, not a Kshatriya. So Krishna is saying, no, you cannot. You must be a Kshatriya. But that's all right. You be a Kshatriya and you fight for me. Okay? Any other? Mangopal. Sincere in purpose. Honesty. Sincere in purpose. Is Dhruva going to be sincere in purpose? Okay, so even if he wants material desires, he's still sincere in purpose. Akama sabkama va mokshkama utardi. So you're saying that the end justifies the motive. If the end is Krishna, it doesn't matter what motive you have. It will change. Yes. Akama sarvakama va, yes. That's what this whole lila is about, actually. Akama sarvakama va mokshakama udharati. Yes? So we should be honest as human beings. So, another thing I thought of, why honest, is, well, actually, it doesn't apply to Dhruva Maharaj. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you should fight for me and think of me. So if you're honest, you're not thinking of sense objects and fighting for Krishna. Or thinking of Krishna and, anyway, you're thinking of Krishna and fighting for Krishna. And I guess this will come with Dhruva, yes. Shenvatam Sakata Krishna. Krishna cleanses the heart of the truthful devotee. He's a benefactor. He's a benefactor of the truthful devotee. Benefactor of the truthful devotee. So we should always remember this. Try to be honest. That should be the motto of every honest person. What should be the motto of every honest person? Seeking perfection in Krishna consciousness. Sincerity and purity. What did Prabhupada say should be the motto? What's that? Parvati? Yes. Fight and think of me. Okay. Not that we renounce our duties and say, okay, Krishna, you fight, and I'll think of you. You do the fighting, and I'll just think of you. No problem. No, not like that. So Prabhupada says, in this connection, Queen Suniti advised her son, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Britya Vatsala, which indicates he is very kind to his devotees. She said, you came to me crying, having been insulted by your stepmother, but I am unable to do any good for you. But Krishna is so kind to his devotees that if you go to him, then the combined kindness of millions of mothers like me will be surpassed by his affectionate and tender dealings. When everyone else fails to mitigate one's misery, Krishna is able to help the devotee. Anybody experience that when you're at the end of your line? Yes, you've experienced it. Only Krishna can help. Queen Suniti also stressed that the process of approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not easy, but is sought after by great sages who are very advanced in spiritual realization. Queen Suniti also indicated by her instruction that Dhruva Maharaj was only a small child, 5 years old, and it was not possible for him to purify himself by the way of Karmakanda. But by the process of Bhakti Yoga, even a child less than 5 years old or anyone of any age can be purified. That is the special significance of Bhakti Yoga. What is the verse from the Chatushloki that confirms this point? Two words from that verse. Chatushloki, Bhagavatam. What did you say? Directly and indirectly. Yeah, you got the right verse. What would you? Sarvacha, Sarvada. Yeah, I was thinking Sarvacha, everywhere and in all conditions. Sarvacha, Sarvada. So even a child, even embryo in the womb can practice bhakti. Even a child, Prabhupada says, even a dog can take part in it. So she is advising him not to follow Karmakanda, but actually Karma Mishra Bhakti. Because he's a Kshatriya, he has that mixture of karma, but still he should do bhakti. Verse 23. Nanyam tata padma palashalachana duka chidam te mrigayami kanchana yamrikyate hastagi hitta padmaya shietarai ranga vivrikyamanaya. My dear Dhruva, as far as I am concerned, I do not find anyone who can mitigate your distress but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes are like lotus petals. Many demigods, such as Lord Brahma, seek the pleasure of the Goddess of Fortune. But the Goddess of Fortune herself, with a lotus flower in her hand, is always ready to render service to the Supreme Lord. So here is the ultimate argument, her last argument. Lakshmi is worshipping the Lord. Why is she mentioning Lakshmi? What is the significance? Sankirtan. He wants Lakshmi. He wants the kingdom. That's his goal. Opulence. What? Authority? Are you? Oh, Artarti. Right, Artarti. So yes, you want opulence. You should worship the Lord. You'll get permanent wealth if you worship the Lord, not by worshiping demigods like Lakshmi. So Prabhupada explains at the end of paragraph 2 in the purport, anyone who takes to the worship of the Supreme Lord automatically receives the blessings of the Goddess of Fortune. At this stage of his life, Dhruva Maharaj was seeking material opulences, and his mother advised rightly that even for material opulence, it is better to worship not the demigods, but the Supreme Lord. So what is the example of a person? Who is the example of a person who worshipped the Lord and got the blessings of Lakshmi? Yes. Yeah, Sudama Brahman. Yes. And he wasn't worshipping for Lakshmi. He just worshipped the Lord and he got Lakshmi. Yeah. Yes, he was averse actually. He was averse to it, so therefore the Lord didn't give it to him in the beginning. He was very averse to having abundance. Yeah, he was attached to poverty. Yeah. So he broke the attachment to poverty by giving him wealth. What an attachment to break in this world. Attached to being poor, austere. But some devotees are like that. There's one devotee in Mayapur who lives in a hut, no electricity. Some people like that. They're attached to that. They have that desire. So here in the purport, last paragraph, Srila Prabhupada explains all about the lotus flower. Suniti, the mother of Dhruva, was a far-seeing woman. Therefore, she advised her son to worship the Supreme Lord and no one else. The Lord is described herein as lotus-eyed, Padma Palasha Lochanat. When a person is fatigued, if he sees a lotus flower, all his fatigue can be immediately reduced to nil. Similarly, when an aggrieved person sees a lotus face, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, immediately all his grief is reduced. So the effect of seeing a lotus flower, or the effect of seeing lotus face of Krishna. So we should always go for darshan, so we can all our grief will be reduced. Here's another meaning. Lotus flower is also an insignia in the hand of Lord Vishnu, as well as in the hand of the goddess of fortune. Worshippers of a goddess of fortune and Lord Vishnu together are certainly very opulent in all respects, even in material life. So Kapila Dev, he said that in 328:22. You meditate on the smile of the Lord, it will dry away the ocean of tears caused by intense grief. Again, in purport of 3.8.27, Srila Prabhupada explains that devotees do not ask anything from the Lord in exchange for their service. Even the most desirable liberation is refused. So the Lord becomes a debtor. And how does he repay the devotees? With his ever-enchanting smile. So that's the payment for your service. You'll get the smile of the Lord on you. Verse 24. The great sage Maitreya continued, the instruction of Dhruva Maharaja's mother Suniti was actually meant for fulfilling his desired objective. Therefore, after deliberate consideration and with intelligence and fixed determination, he left his father's house. What are the three qualities he had when he left his father's house? One was determination, fixed determination. That's, what is that? Nisht? No, that's getting out. What's fixed determination? Anyway.
Intelligence.
And another one. Deliberate consideration. So he was thoughtful. He thought about it. He didn't just leave out of passion. He left with intelligence and deliberate consideration. He thought about it quite deeply. And so Srila Prabhupada said, very nice statement here in this purport again. Both the mother and son were lamenting Dhruva Maharaja's having been insulted by his stepmother and his father's not having taken any step on this issue. But mere lamentation is useless. One should find out the means to mitigate one's lamentation. So some people, they just like to lament. They just like. And they go to other people and they tell them all their troubles. Oh, yeah, this happened to me. That just kind of get a rasa out of that lamentation. Oh, I'm so unfortunate. This is my problem. And nobody is like me. Nobody has my problem. Anyway, this lamentation, but it's better than just lamenting, is to do something about it. Get yourself out of it. Mitigate your lamentation. So both mother and son decided to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, because that is the only solution to all material problems. Interesting. So how do we do that? If we have some material problem, how do we take shelter of the Lord to solve our material problems? Etavan Yoga Sankalpyam Sotarma Parinishtaya Jamalava Parapungsa Ante Narayanasmi. Okay, so all your duties, everything.
Whether you are perfect in your life, whether you are
your Swadharma or a yogi.
Yes.
The perfection is if you remember Krishna at the time of death. Well, what about right now in this life? Yeah. Get up early in the morning. Go to Mangalarti. Chant your rounds in the temple.
On Brahma Muhurta time, especially.
In Brahma Muhurta.
And not sleep at this time.
So this is. Okay. Now, we don't want. Now, the norms for classroom behavior is not to name any names. We will deal with the issues and not the names. Yes, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Okay, for today, you'll have to be silent for the rest of the day because you broke the norms of classroom behavior. Anybody else? Yes. You can reveal your mind to the Lord, take advantage of the presence of the Lord. Means who? Where? How? Gornitai, Krishna Balaram. Go to the deities. Reveal your mind. Pray to them for help. They're your friends. Humbly ask for forgiveness. Yes.
And acceptance.
Okay. Hare Purush. Go to Vrindavan. Okay, now we're in Vrindavan. Now what are we doing? Now what? Okay, we're in Vrindavan. That part we've done. So far we're one step. We've done the first step. We've gone to Vrindavan. Now the next step, I think Sankirtan is giving us, that you go to the deities of Vrindavan and you beg for help and for forgiveness and for acceptance. Yes. Shrotavya Kirtitavyascha. You always answer in Sanskrit. So that's a very nice habit. If I ask a question, you can answer in Sanskrit. We should only talk in Sanskrit. Yes. Shrotavyas, Kirtitavyas cha.
Glorify,
remember Krishna. This is the solution to all problems, all material problems. Yes. Okay. So now we're going to go to our. Oh no, let's talk about Vrindavan. Because Prabhupada, this purport, actually. I didn't finish the purport, did I? Because that's the rest of the purport. Let's read the rest of the purport. Where did I leave off? It is indicated in this connection that Dhruva Maharaj left his father's capital, city, to go to a secluded place to search out the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is the instruction of Prahlad Maharaj also that if one is seeking peace of mind, he should free himself from all contamination of family life and take shelter of the Supreme Godhead by going to the forest, just like Adipurusha Prabhu said. To the Gaudiya Vaishnava, this forest is the forest of Vrinda, or Vrindavan. If one takes shelter of Vrindavan under Vrindavaneshri, Shrimati Radharani, certainly all the problems of his life are solved very easily. So, we are in Vrindavan. So if we take shelter of the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, all our problems are solved. So we're very fortunate we're here in Vrindavan. Let's do it. But how is it, actually? How does taking shelter, I want to know, how does taking shelter of Radharani solve all the problems of life? Very easily. Anybody have that experience? You're silent today, remember? Tomorrow we'll hear more. Yes. What's that?
That so-called big problem.
Yes.
That big trouble. And one is actually realizes actually no problem.
Okay, so when you get closer to Krishna or Srimati Radharani, then that big, big problem you had shrinks and it becomes no problem. Just like when Prabhupada was here and he asked, is everything all right? And you look at Prabhupada and as soon as you see Prabhupada, everything was all right. As soon as we go away from Prabhupada, big problems. the same here. As long as you're in touch with Srimati Radharani, and it's pretty difficult not to be in Vrindavan. There's always Radhe, 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 Radhe. Everyone's reminding you, the Rikshawala, the Bhangi, everybody. It's Radhe, Radhe. So, but if you forget Radharani, then you're in trouble. Bhagavata, you had something to say. Okay, so the problem is coming from the material consciousness. So if we get out of the material consciousness, then there's no problem. Then there's no problem. Okay, so let's see. Prabhupada recommends, I just have a few short quotes, Radharani's mood. That if Radharani is pleased and she sees you coming to approach her to serve Krishna, then she will say, oh, here's a devotee of Krishna. Better than me. She will say, here's this devotee is better than me. Then she will recommend us to Krishna. So Prabhupada says, this is Radharani. I may not be a devotee. I may be most fallen rascal. But if I try to reach Krishna through Radharani, then my business is successful. So we should always remember that. We're in Vrindavan. Radharani's in control here. She's in charge. She's the one. We have to go through her. Srimati Radharani. And Prabhupada told us a prayer. We should pray to Radharani that, Radharani, please be merciful and tell your Krishna about me. Krishna is yours. So we should all go in front of Radharani and tell Radharani, please tell your Krishna about me. So this is our process. Not that I am a great devotee of Krishna, I will do this and that. No, we approach through Srimati Radharani. And Srila Prabhupada is reminding us here in this purport of Dhruva Maharaj leaving home that we should also do the same thing. We've already left. We've already come to Srimati Radharani. Verse 25. The great sage Narada overheard this news, and understanding all the activities of Dhruva Maharaj, he was struck with wonder. He approached Dhruva and, touching the boy's head with his all-virtuous hand, he spoke as follows. Now, how did Narada know? No internet, no telephone. What's that? Tree Kalagya. So there is a subtle connection here, somehow. Yes. So Paramatma is the original internet. Yes, because Paramatma is in everyone's heart, so you got a connection from every heart there. If you just connect with Paramatma, then you're connected to the whole universe. Much better than internet, right? Because not only do you have the external, you've got the internal, what's going on inside, as well as outside. So Narada Muni had this connection, internal, tri kala gya, not only present, even the past, even the future. So just imagine if internet could tell us the future and the past. Of course, the past they have, but the future they don't have. So that would be quite interesting. So just see, modern technology cannot compare to the sages, to our natural capacity. If we are in touch with Super Soul, if we're in touch with Krishna, so much greater than anything the scientist can do in this world. So much. So that's why if you worship Krishna, you can do the impossible. And nobody can understand how you're doing it. How is it possible you're doing this? So let's see how Prabhupada explains this. Tri Kalagyam. How did Narada know? Prabhupada says in the purport, somewhere, I don't know exactly where, it may be explained in this way, Srila Prabhupada says. Maybe it's in the middle of the purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in everyone's heart. And as soon as he understands that a living entity is serious about entering devotional service, he sends his representative. In this way, Narada was sent to Dhruva Maharaj. This is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. So here's our technical explanation of how Narada knew. By the grace of spiritual master and Krishna, one can enter into devotional service. Because of Dhruva Maharaj's determination, Krishna, the Super Soul, immediately sent his representative, Narada, to initiate him. So this is what happens. Guru is representative of Krishna. So if Krishna wants to give us mercy, this is the way he does it. He does it through the Guru. We can't approach Krishna directly. But through the Guru, carries Krishna's kripa shakti, mercy shakti. Actually, in one place Prabhupada says, the Guru is the incarnation of the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So Radharani is also described that way. The Guru is also described, incarnation of mercy. So with a combination of Krishna and the Guru, then we can have mercy. Krishna will say, no, it's my devotee. It's because of my devotee, then everything is happening. And the devotee will say, no, no, it's the credit of my Guru or the credit of Krishna. All these things are happening. So this is Krishna's system, going through the devotee. Verse 26, Narada Muni's observation of Dhruva Maharaj.
Aho teja kshatriyanam manabhangam amrishitam balapyayam hidatate yat samaturasad vacha.
How wonderful are the powerful kshatriyas. They cannot tolerate even a slight infringement upon their prestige. Just imagine, this boy is only a small child, yet harsh words from his stepmother proved unbearable to him. So in Bhagavad Gita, qualifications of kshatriyas are described. What are some of those qualifications? In Sanskrit, if you can, tell me. Or in English, if you can't. Shauryam. Tejo, titi daksham. Yudhi chapyaplayanam. Danam, isharabhavascha. So shauryam, heroism. Teja, power. Driti. So Dhruva has this driti, determination. And dakshyam, resourcefulness. He will show us how resourceful he is in the forest. And yude chapyapalayanam, we'll hear about that when after he becomes king, how he doesn't flee from battle. Danam, generosity also. And ishra bhava, he has this ishra bhava. He must be a leader. He must have a kingdom to rule, otherwise he cannot be happy. So tomorrow we'll see in what a wonderful way how Narada preaches to Dhruva Maharaj, according to his capacity or capability as a kshatriya, Dhruva Maharaj's kshatriya nature, then Narada will take advantage of that in his preaching according to time, place, and circumstance. So tomorrow you should read verses 27 to 44. We're changing the schedule because I have to get 4 classes into 3 days. So any questions or comments on today's verses? Yes. Okay, her question is, when Suruchi said, you have to take birth from my womb, was she being sarcastic or did she really mean it? Who thinks that she was sarcastic? Who thinks that she really meant it? One, all the women think so, they know. All the women think, I also think, she really meant it. Prabhupada says in the purport, she wanted him to die. Yes, and take birth again. No, worship the Lord first. First he has to be, before he dies, he has to worship the Lord and become qualified to be in her womb. And then he should die, and then take birth.
Worship the Lord so that after you die, you take birth.
In her womb, yeah.
Worship the Lord.
Yeah, become qualified to be my son. Right now you're not qualified. So heavy envy. Time scale, which time scale? Well, they used to live long in those days.
Well, her son died. So he couldn't attain the kingdom anyway.
Right. Well, that will happen later on. We'll see.
How her son.
Oh, of course. Of course it was. Of course it was. All of it is part of the reaction. He dies, she dies. All these. So heavy. Vaishnava Aparad, don't do it.
And he didn't have to take birth.
Right. Well, he got the kingdom before. before any of that happens. So it's very instructive, these stories. Why it's not good to be envious, why it's not good to be angry, why it's not good to curse people. Because just see what happens to the people who curse. Look what happened to Daksha, look what happened to Ruchi. Just, this is very instructive Leela for us. Yes, Adi Purush?
Fast, you do some sadhana, take some ratas and die fast, and then you will take birth from my womb. And
yes.
You see your mother crying, and yes, I will be happy, and you will be happy because you will take birth of my son and you will get birth.
Yes, so she's really envious. So Vishnu Chagavati Thakur says that, yes, you should go perform austerities and quickly die, so you can take birth in my womb, and your mother will cry, but you'll be happy, and I'll be happy, because you'll be born from my womb. So just see the envy. Oh, of course, co-wife. Co-wife, she's envious of the co-wife. In the story of Chittaketu, yes, yes. The co-wives all became envious of the first wife. Only she had a child, and they had no children. So this happens. These are some of the things that happen in the material world. And this is one of the defects of polygamy, that the co-wives get envious and they do things. Yeah. Meanings of the name Suruchi?
Suniti is very moral.
Means very moral. According to Niti, Niti is moral. Yes. Tasteful and graceful. More beautiful, beautiful. Ruchi. Beautiful externally. And Niti is more moral, religious. Suniti and Suruchi. So obviously he was getting a taste from Suruchi. And he didn't want to follow Suniti. He didn't want to follow the Niti. He wanted the Ruchi. And between his two wives. Yeah, he preferred the material enjoyment to the... She was younger, the younger wife. So the younger wife was giving more sense gratification. The older wife was maybe have been more moral. But that's not so interesting in this material world. He left the city and went to the forest. The capital, it says the capital of Uttanapad. So what was the city? You're asking exactly... Well, it would seem that it would be the palace of Manu that he would have inherited. As we heard the description last year of Manu's palace. Manu's, what's that? Yes, Barhishmati. So the son would inherit the palace of his father, Manu. It would appear that would be my guess. Adi Purush, does any commentator say anything about, no, it doesn't. Left the city. The palace of Manu, Uttanapad. Sankirtan Das?
I'm kind of questioning this on Dharma and the compulsiveness of, these are there right at the beginning of creation.
Yes.
But then we also know we have the beginning of creation is Satya Yuga also. That's the first Yuga which always appears.
Yes. Satya Yuga is the first Yuga. Now his question is that, are these irreligious principles existent during the time of Satya Yuga? Are they existing? This is Satya Yuga, right here. You're saying, is it? Yes, it is Satya. It appears that this is during Satya Yuga. So obviously the qualities were there, because Suruchi had them. Yes. Achha. These are devis. Devis. Tamasa Shakti. So previously Sattvika Shakti was described. Now Tamasa Shakti. The other daughters of Kardama. These are Brahma, no? These are Brahma's children. Brahma's children. Brahma's children. Guru Sevananda, there is an injunction that the somebody's brother cannot have children in the wife of the brother. There is an injunction like that. There is that injunction, I know. As far as I know, there's no injunction, but when Prabhupada was here, many devotees wanted to have polygamy. Not many, but some. And they would write to Prabhupada and ask his permission. And Prabhupada never gave permission, as far as I understood, and he didn't encourage it. He did not encourage it, and it became a law in ISKCON not to, because they want to follow the law of the state as well as the law of God. And also Prabhupada brought up the point that you cannot maintain more than one. It's very difficult even to maintain one wife. When if you have many wives, how many children are you going to have? Bhaktivinoda, he had two wives, many children. Yeah. Well, I think one died and then... No, not two at a time. Yeah, that's true. Srinivasacharya. Yeah, it's there in the... Rasikananda also had three, I think, or something. Nityananda had two. Yeah, now it's not recommended. It's not recommended. Because it's unacceptable in the eyes of the society at large. But the Muslims still follow it. There's Muslims. Muslims, they do. Mormons also. Muslims also. Some Hindus do it, actually, also. Prabhupada told the story of one man. He had one rich man in Calcutta. He had like seven wives. And he had a house for each one. And all their children. And he said most of the children were illegitimate because he was old and he couldn't have children. So they were just enjoying with other people. And he was all these illegitimate children. You know, 3 lakhs for this one, 3 lakhs for that one. None of half of them weren't his children. But so these are the problems. Okay, somebody over here. You had your hand up? The Mormons were persecuted. Some devotees actually went ahead and did it. I think so. Right.
But then you saw the legal problems and you also saw what they did with it.
Yes.
And it was very miserable that they did with
it. Yeah, it was misapplied. It's misapplied. It was simply taking the sense gratification part and leaving, just like people, they take the Vedas, they take the part where you don't follow the rules, but you take the fruit. You take the enjoyment without taking the medicine. So they would do the have polygamy, but they wouldn't be responsible for the children or the wives. In ISKCON, yeah, that has happened. And the children are all like unwanted. And, I mean, they came out okay, some of them, but
half the time it happens even though they only have one wife.
Yeah, so what to speak of many wives? Even one wife, it's that way. Yes. Ekapatni Vrat. Yes. We should follow that. Yeah. There is. But there are rules to that too. Like if you're a Brahmana, the first wife should be a Brahmin, the second Kshatriya, third should be lower and lower. The first one should be the Brahmani. Anyway, there's different rules. There's a lot of... I mean, they don't follow the rules. They just want to have the enjoyment, which is exactly what Narada chastised Vyasadeva for. We got all these nice Vedic things we can enjoy very nicely, but then to hell with the rules and regulations. You know, that we'll just take this part, the enjoying part, and forget the rules. So this happens, and this has happened. So therefore... It's not in this age. It's practically impossible. Yeah.
This book was meant here by most of the disciples for me. Vidya nishtha nadi adhika vidya mukha nadi vidya nishtha bhavatule dharma nadi nam. Itu upadesh for me. Madhya 19:146.
146 Madhya.
19:146.
Of all human beings, those who follow the Vedic principles are considered civilized.
Among these, almost half simply give lip service one could think all kinds of sinful activities.
Okay. Among these civilized persons, almost half simply give lip service while committing all kinds of sinful activities. Such people do not care for regulative principles. So this is true among the civilized persons, that almost half will just give lip service and not follow. So therefore, it's polygamy. This is something that's like that. They will give lip service, but they won't follow the rules. They won't be responsible. And this was Prabhupada's point. If you want to do this, you have to be very responsible for all the children, both the wife, everything. It means, yes, everyone has to be satisfied. So this is, yes.
There was once a paper circulating by Prabhupada's disciple from LA. He was saying that Kanya Dan is being the daughter of
Kanya Dan.
Yeah, so he says that in his con, because the young girl who should get married, there are no suitable husbands. So that person who has already a wife, and then he showed through letters of Prabhupada the conversation in 1977. The very interesting conversation come on Krishna Prasanna in Prabhupada. Prabhupada says, yes, this is dharma, and the other thing is adharma. You don't have to marry. And then come on Krishna Prasanna says, whatever I can do, legal side. It's not legal. And Prabhupada says, we don't care. They don't care for their adharma.
Yeah, well, Prabhupada, when he saw how we applied this thing, then he said, yeah.
In principle, Prabhupada said, the idea is that many are renunciates,
right.
The girl more or less.
But mostly this was for the Kshatriyas, because the Kshatriyas could maintain many wives. It's for the Kshatriyas who were in charge of management, and they needed a lot of encouragement in their management so they could marry. And also there's a Kshatriya principle that you could not refuse any woman who wanted to marry you. The Kshatriyas could break all the four, practically all the four regulative principles, the rules and regulations still behind, even though they break, there's a reason behind it. To keep order in the forest, to keep order in the jungle, they would kill disturbing animals. It's not just you go and kill any animal in the forest. When Prabhupada said they would be creating disturbances, certain animals they would kill. And also to practice, but basically they would aim for those who are disturbances. And also certain animals were required for sacrifice. That they would have to bring back. But now in Kali Yuga, these things are out the window. Yeah. Yes. Back to reality. Reality check here. And also with Kapila Dev, it is said they should be equal in age and character and age. Not that somebody much older should marry somebody much younger. But character and age, these are two requirements. And that's how Devahuti was married to Kardama. Yata shilam, yata something. Remember. It should be very similar. I mean, the age should be proper. There should be a proper... Yeah, some difference. Yeah. 1624, right.
This was one of my first experiences when I joined ISKCON. I was working for not such a long time. And one couple visited the temple, and it took me weeks to recover from the experience, because it was a couple like this of one Prabhupada disciple who had given his daughter, who was 15 years old, to one of his brothers, and they visited the temple, and it was I got so disgusted that it took me weeks before I worked it out that if this is Krishna consciousness, then maybe I came to the wrong place. Because the man was old already, he was over 50 or something, and he was obviously a sense envoy. I mean, it was his whole personality was oozing of strange vibration, and the girl was, she was stupid. I don't know how they educated her, but she was, I was asking her questions, and I don't know how she had been educated, but there was nothing about spiritual life in her education, or maybe in her samskaras, I don't know. And they had just been married. And of course, after a couple of years, the news came that they had just divorced.
Yeah.
This was this kind of...
Was that one wife or both wives?
I don't know whether he had two, but at least he had a cañar at least. And I heard the story that one of his godbrothers had given the daughter to him. And the difference in age was amazing. And we could see that this comes from a culture which has nothing to do with organization. So it all depends, all these things are there in the Shastras, but I would say depends upon the individual, that what do I want in my life.
Right. So the example is there of Sukanya and Chaivanamuni. But then later he became young, so that he became beautiful and young. So if they can do that, then no problem. They have that mystic power. Yes, they have to go to Ashwini Kumar's. Yeah, yes? 14-year-old. 14 women, a devotee. Oh, thank God. 14 at once. They all knew each other, all the wives. Really? They all lived together. What religion was he? Oh, okay. Okay. So here's a story, a true life story, of a man in Australia who married 14 wives. And at first it was okay, but then after a while they started fighting with each other, and the guy was completely upset and he wanted to get away from it all, so he moved onto the farm, devotee farm in Australia. A true story. He wasn't even attractive. He had a good voice. He could convince them. That, yes.
I read in a magazine another of these stories that it was in a very, it became published in magazines in America, that one man, he had two wives, but they didn't know.
Oh, they didn't know.
I suppose there are quite a few.
Yeah, there are.
So he had one family, but he had a whole setup with a legal marriage and children and all. He had a house he was maintaining, so he was living some time of the week in one city, then he would fly for business to another city, and there he had a second setup with another wife and other children. And everything was working very wonderfully. He was managing very nicely financially, emotionally. Everything was going very nicely until the wives found out.
Wow. And they both filed for divorce.
What about the business?
So interesting.
There's
a lot of people, actually some people fly to work every day and fly back at night. There's a shuttle flight between New York. Oh, he was a pilot maybe.
Sorry?
Was he a pilot?
No,
okay. No, but there are people, I've seen, when you go in America, there are shuttle planes. They take you in the morning to one city, and in the evening you go back, you fly back. What's that? You know a devotee like that. One morning he goes to work, he flies. Yeah. No, one of my brothers, he flies every few days. Because he has a business, and he has to fly all over around America. So it's just, that's just life. I mean, in the rat race, in the fast Kali Yuga. And Prabhupada's talking about going on the train to work. Well, now people go on the plane to work.
So what the dog is, us, Varna Ashram, and Varnas are always there. You may follow them or not. It's similar. Tendencies are more inclined.
Oh, yes, yes. Prabhupada says that in some purport. The man is not satisfied with one wife, generally. precepts. Where's that?
In Gita. You know, the verse that says,
even on the royal road, you can have an accident. That's why even devotees have problems. And they get into these things. So any more questions or comments on today's verses or life in general? Yes.
The first verse was that some of them they chose not to marry.
Okay, now she's bringing us back to the first verse of today's class. We're not going to end with all this discussion on polygamy. We're going to end with Naishtik Brahmachari life. The first verse, Urdhvareta. First verse is Naishtik Brahmachari. So we are encouraged in this age of Kali to remain Brahmachari. Yeah.
Also,
yesterday's
question about the Vedas.
About the Yajurveda. Okay, yesterday's question on the Yajurveda.
Atharvaveda is always separate because this is protecting mantras.
Atharvaveda is separate because these are protecting mantras.
Against enemies and disease.
Against enemies and disease.
Often not included in the Vedas, so
it's separate. It's not even Atharva. Okay. Among the three other Vedas,
Yajur is the Veda of sacrifice.
Yajur is
Veda of sacrifice.
Rig Veda is the Veda of hymns.
Samaveda is the Veda of chants.
And Samaveda is the Veda of chants or mantras.
So they're all mantras.
They're all mantras.
Yajur Veda hymns are muttered.
Yajur Veda hymns are muttered.
Rig Veda hymns are recited.
Rig Veda hymns are recited, muttered, japa, softly. Which one's soft? Yajurveda is soft, like japa, soft, Gayatri Mantra, sacrifice. Rig Veda is recited.
Chanted,
yeah. Samaveda is sung, it's a song. So you've got muttered, recited and sung.
And sacrifice, praise, and chants.
Sacrifice, praise, and chants.